for the benefit of our listening audience, I will name each candidate as we go through. I'll give the question, then I'll call on a candidate to respond. So I'm going to again begin with the first question that came to me tonight. And all these questions are to be addressed to all of the candidates. The first question, are you involved in the bribery scandal, and if so, how? We'll begin with Mr. McMahon.
No. I'm not involved in any kind of scandal.
Mr. Williams.
Well, I have not attempted to bribe anybody. However, representatives of one of the other candidates did come to me and offer me a position way back in November to get out of the race. I declined that offer. I told them if they wanted to speak with me about anything else, I would be happy to. And, of course, that meeting never happened. I actually did report that to the media at that time. However, I did not provide names because I didn't want it to become a he said versus he said. In an interview with the commercial news, the editor kind of cornered me and said, look, if you think there's something going on, don't you have an obligation to protect the people of this city? And I said, absolutely. And so at that time, I did provide names. But yes, a job offer was made to me, and that is the truth.
Did I make you an offer?
No, sir, you did not, but representatives, people representing you did.
Mr. Eisenhower.
At no time have I offered anyone any type of bribe or job to get in or out of the race, and at no time has anyone approached me with such an offer.
Mr. Quick.
No, at no time have I offered or made anybody an offer in this race. Yes, I was approached by Mouse McMahon and made an offer. I think we all know what that was. Yes.
Next question, we'll start with Mr. Williams. What are your plans for East Main Street in terms of prostitution, drugs, alcohol, slumlords and street repairs, those issues that need to, this person feels need to be addressed on East Main Street?
Absolutely. Number one, this, as I've said all along, is hiring 3 additional police officers. Had many questions about how we'll pay for that. There are many management and middle management positions, particularly in the Public Works Department, that I think we should eliminate. That would save us a little more than $700,000. We're looking at paying police officers $50,000 a year plus benefits. So we're looking at $200,000 there. That gives us an additional $500,000 to use towards street repair. One of the areas that we will be focusing on is Main Street. All along, I've maintained to you folks that we must focus on one area of the town at a time. That's what I was trying to say. You know, it's great to tear down a house here or there. The people around that neighborhood are happy, but it does not result in true neighborhood or change or revitalization for our community. We must be selective. Main Street, the East Main Street corridor is one of the priorities that I have in mind.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Thank you. Yes, this was one of the areas where we've utilized the problem-oriented policing unit. It has worked on several occasions. Do we still have issues out there? Absolutely. That's why we need to continue to look at the crime trending data and utilize the proactive force of a problem-oriented policing unit. We need to do significant demolition of properties out in the East Main Street area so that we can open those areas up for future development. One of the things that we have found is that developers have a hard time looking at possibilities when they see structures sitting within those lots. So demolition of properties within that area is key. And then also, we just recently opened up a tax increment financing district within that area that allows us the ability for land acquisition, demolition, infrastructure repairs. That is a relatively new TIF district. So just now, enough money is built up where we can actually begin utilizing it, and that will be one of our marquee steps in the next 4 years.
Mr. Quick.
I have said all along that we need to add police officers. If we look in last year's budget and we see where budgets were cut, the police funding was actually one of those budgets that went down. Crime has went up, and we have decreased our budget in funding the police officers. We need to change that, and we need to add police officers so we can live in a safe community. With our roads, I can tell you I've been walking for the last 5 weeks. I've been going door to door. One of the biggest complaints that I've heard is the shape that our streets are in. Everywhere I went, I don't care if it was Denville to the East End, the roads were in terrible shape. It was one of the biggest complaints that I heard. We need to put a long-term plan in place and make sure that the economics are in place to support that plan. And yes, we do need to target certain areas, and we'll prioritize those areas. Thank you.
Mr. McMahon.
First of all, we got to start on Main Street. All we do is talk about Main Street. Main Street has the highest payroll, which is the VA and the DACC. Those are our two biggest payrolls, and that's where most of our community goes to, and yet they got to drive through all that blight in and around that area. We need to quit talking about it and start doing that. Under this administration, we have lost 6 police officers, and then we wonder why crime rate has actually went up, not down. We need to do a much better job, and we need to start on the east end of town to help those citizens feel safe again.
The next question will begin with Mr. Eisenhower. If you are elected, what is the first improvement you would make for our city? Please be specific.
I think the first improvement that we would continue to make over the course of the next 4 years is in the area of economic development. And what you have seen as of late is our ability to pull together resources, whether it's an enterprise zone, whether it's the TIF districts that we've implemented, whether it's some of the new incentive plans that we've been able to put together for land acquisition or for demolition of property. Those resources now are starting to come together to where we have a true economic development source, revenue and resources that we can start attracting, whether it's retail, industry, or manufacturing into this community. So I'm very excited about what we've already put into place and looking forward to more of what you've already started to see in business expansions, new retail opportunities coming to the community, and you'll see more of that, I think, here in the next 4 years as the economy changes.
Mr. Quick.
Well, economic development is very important, but I think the safety of our community comes number one to me. I met a young couple that had both had degrees, moved into this community. Both had bachelor and master's degrees. They chose Danville to come and make Danville their home. They started a family. Their apartment complex had been broken into while they were there. 3 weeks later, their cars were broken into. That young couple that we needed to be a valuable part of this community left because they didn't feel safe here. Me personally, in my own business, we've been broken into multiple times. We have to put safety as number one. We need to be safe in this community, and you need to feel safe. So I would work on safety.
Mr. McMahon.
The first thing we have to do is get our city back in house in order. We have to become customer friendly so that our citizens feel like our city is for the city and not for themselves. We have to work together as a team with our businesses. Our businesses feel like you're just going to tax them out of existence. So the first thing we're going to work on is customer service and working with our community so our community believes that our city is for them, not for themselves.
Mr. Williams.
The very first thing that I would do is make sure that we get our financial house in order, because that's the key to success in every other area, folks. So number one, we are going to start off by reassessing the budget. I can tell you I'm not going to vote for the budget that's coming up because it has too much fat in it. We have to eliminate some of the waste before we can move forward. So the very first thing that I will do is assess the budget. I will ask for line-by-line, itemized budget line by line, and we will be going through to eliminate some of the things in there. We have to have zero-based budgeting, which means we focus first on the things that we're required to do contractually and by state law and federal law and by our local law, and then from there we are going to focus on the things that we need, and then if there's any money left over at all, the things that we want. But we have to first get our fiscal house in order, because if we don't, we cannot improve our infrastructure, we cannot improve public safety, and we will have to continue to tax you to death.
The next question will begin with Mr. Quick. This person asks, I would like you to state clearly your stand on the following issues: Section 8 housing and tearing down Fair Oaks housing and building different housing.
On Section 8 housing, I think we need to decrease that. For one reason, our community is not healthy. We cannot meet the needs and the services of the people that continue to move into this community. I don't think that we need to tear down the Section 8 housing at Fair Oaks. We have rebuilt that five times. We, the taxpayers, are tired of rebuilding things that people do not take care of. So we have to have those people become a viable part of this community. I have a plan, and I talked about that plan today with a group of pastors that we met with. But we can no longer continue to bring in more Section 8 because we cannot provide the services and meet their needs. And we do not want to tear down that housing because they need to take care of what they have like we take care of what we have.
Mr. McMahon.
I applaud the mayor on what his accomplishments been on Section 8, but those figures have been down for the last 2 years, and you can see it's not helped our crime rate at all. I don't agree with tearing down Fair Oaks at this point in the game. I agree with working with our citizens and coming up with a plan which would better set with the housing and work with the housing authority to find out what our community needs really are. We need to be a partner with the housing authority, not an enemy.
Mr. Williams.
I have a bachelor's degree in political science and 4 years of study in public policy and urban development, specifically housing, so this is something I know a lot about. The bottom line is this. We are suffering from a concentration effect, and we are at the saturation point, which means that we have exceeded the number of folks that we can sustain and meet the needs of in this community. So I did vote with Mayor Eisenhower to reduce the number of Section 8 and public housing units in the future. However, unlike the mayor, I would not mislead you. He's going around telling people that we've gone from over 600 Section 8 vouchers to less than 400, and that's simply not true, folks. We already have less than 400 vouchers already in existence. What we've done is prevented us from going up to that maximum number in the future. Absolutely, we should not tear down Fair Oaks, and here's why. Older buildings tend to be constructed better than new buildings are, the better quality of materials, etc. So why would we spend millions of dollars to tear something down and build something up that's not going to work? Mixed income housing is not successful in most larger cities. We have a couple of local places where it has been, but that's not the trend nationally.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Well, I'm glad we finally all agree on one thing, and that is my plan's right and it's working. So I at least appreciate that. You know, the fact of the matter is that was a huge step that we took in reducing from 620 certified down to 397. The reason it's a big deal is because nationally the trend is to increase the funding for public housing. So while we've been able to decrease it over the last 2 years, again, thanks to some of the work we've been doing already, the fear has always been that the federal government's going to come along with a much bigger check and say, here, let's get back to that 620 number where you're certified. Today, that cannot happen because they are restricted to the 397 number. We do need to tear down Fair Oaks. It is deplorable that anybody has to live in those types of conditions. Mixed income housing does work because when you put Section 8, public housing, fair market value, and home ownership all in the same area, it gives you an opportunity to succeed slowly, going from the lower step to the top step, getting to that true ultimate goal of home ownership. It's worked in Springfield, it's worked in Champaign, it's worked in Peoria, it will work in Danville.
The next question will be for Mr. McMahon to start. Have you ever requested the office of mayor or police to grant preferential treatment for yourself, family, or friends?
You want to repeat that?
Sure.
It doesn't even make sense.
I know. Well, the individual is asking, have you ever requested the office of mayor or police to grant preferential treatment for yourself, family, or friends?
The answer would have to be no.
Mr. Williams?
Absolutely not. And since I have a little more time, I'll follow up on a previous question. The mayor says to you that mixed income housing works. Folks, it does not work. What ends up happening is there's a stigma that's often attached to any kind of Section 8 or public housing. So those low-income units that we've talked about renting or home ownership, people do not end up buying those houses. Other low-income folks do not end up moving into those areas because of the concern and the stigma over Section 8. So what ends up happening is you end up with having almost totally Section 8 properties. So if that's what you want to happen, then absolutely, we should tear down Fair Oaks and build mixed-income housing.
Mr. Eisenhower.
I have never asked myself for preferential treatment, nor have I ever asked the police for it. And if you want to be sure of that, just ask my daughter whether or not she's gotten a ticket. So no, at no time have I asked myself or a police officer for preferential treatment.
Mr. Quick.
No. The answer is no.
The next question, and we will begin with Mr. Williams. What is one promise that you can make tonight that you feel will improve Danville? How will you implement it? And are you willing to not seek re-election if unable to complete that promise?
Wow, that's about a 3 or 4 part
of
the
agenda. At least let's get this first part.
I'll be fine. What promise can I make to you tonight? The one promise that I can make to you more than anything else, folks, is that we will have the integrity to not only treat our citizens with respect, but to be fiscally responsible. Will I give up after one term if I'm not fiscally responsible? Absolutely.
Mr. Eisenhower.
I too would say fiscal responsibility, and we've done that over the course of the last 8 years. We've been extremely financially responsible. We have made decisions that have been difficult for some people to accept, both in increasing or diversifying revenue sources, and then also streamlining government by reducing it through 72 people. But I certainly will continue to be financially responsible. I said from the very first day I came into office 8 years ago that at no time would I ever do anything just because it will better my chances to get reelected in the next campaign, but rather I will do things that make Danville a better place to live, work, and play, and I will continue to do that and live by that philosophy over the next 4 years.
Mr. Quick.
I can promise to you that I'm going to be honest, I'm going to be hardworking, I'm going to work just as hard for you as I do in my own business, I'm going to build trust, I'm going to build respect, and I am going to be fiscally responsible. I am in my own business. It's very successful. I don't spend more than I take in, and I'm very good with knowing how and where to make cuts.
Mr. McMahon.
I can promise you that I will not raise taxes over the next 4 years, and if I had to raise taxes over the next years, I would not seek re-election, and I can promise you that I'll never have an audit like this. In this audit, it says you're $16 million in debt. In this audit, it says there's money moved illegally and money has been transferred from funds to funds unauthorized. That you will not see under my leadership.
The next question will start with Mr. Eisenhower. Do you feel the office of mayor is a full-time or part-time position? And if full-time, will you divest other businesses or interests? And if part-time, are you willing to be paid accordingly?
It is absolutely a full-time job. I put in approximately 65 hours a week into the office of mayor. That will not change over the course of the next 4 years. The one bit of rest and relaxation that I do take advantage of on occasion is that I would like to continue to do sports broadcasting for Neuhoff Media. That happens on Friday nights if there's nothing else going on in the office of mayor. But it is absolutely more than a full-time job. I have treated it that way for the last 8 years, and I will continue to treat it that way for the next 4 years.
Mr. Quick.
Well, having not worked the job, I hope it is a full-time job. I've had a lot of questions about my business and who would run it if I'm gone. We have a very competent manager, a very competent assistant manager, and most importantly, my wife retired this year, so there will be an owner that will be there that will take charge of our business. And it's very important if you have a business that an owner be there. My wife has supported me 100% in this, so yes, I think the mayor's job will be a full-time job. Anybody that knows me, they know that I start at 4 o'clock in the morning and I don't stop until 9, 9:30 in the evening. So I'll take this job very seriously. Thank you.
Mr. McMahon.
Well, since I already have a full-time job, I thank the Lord every day for my wife, Sharon, and my daughter, Lisa, and my mother-in-law, Rosemary, who run the roller rink in my absence. And when I'm off work, guess what? I'm still doing county business today. When people come out to the roller rink, they have the ability to find me on the weekends. I still work 24/7 for this county, and I thank the Lord for my family.
Mr. Williams.
Yes, the position of mayor is a more than full-time job. I've been thinking about all the events that I've attended since I've been a candidate, and I imagine that Scott only spends even more time out in the community supporting events there. And I plan to be a mayor of the community as well and to support you in various tasks that you're undergoing in various areas. diverting other interests, absolutely. As many of you know, I'm the executive director of the Boys and Girls Club. I've enjoyed that time there. However, that's coming to an end one way or another, folks. Whether you elect me or not, I will be turning over the reins of that organization to someone else at some point this year. We have already identified potential successors, one of them being our program director, Ms. Stephanie Dixon, who has shown a lot of prowess in not only programming, but also being financially astute and management as well. And I think that the thing that we have to remember is that what is your passion and your love for it, and I'm going to give it my all every single day if I'm elected as your mayor.
The next question will begin with Mr. Quick. How do you see neighborhood associations assisting in your administration, and what measures would you take for their continuance?
Well, neighborhood associations play a very important part in the revitalization of this community. A friend of mine, Annette Pitlick, is head of a neighborhood association on the East End. She said that the association wasn't moving along as she had expected it to and didn't get a lot of improvement, a lot of people wanting to join. But what happened was they had a breakdown, which then made a breakthrough. In less than 2 weeks, four of the houses in that neighborhood had been broken into. The neighborhood association pulled together, put together a group. They now watch each other's home. They now do a lot of different things. So there's a lot of power in that when people can work together, come together as a community, and get to know your neighbor.
Mr. McMahon.
I 100% support the neighborhood groups and neighborhood watch groups also. When I was elected in 87, I was chairman of the finance committee at that time, and we used to put together under Glenn Eicher and Sheila, we put together what they call PI, Partners in Enhancement. And every week, one week in a summer, we would go to each ward and clean up the area. And that really cleaned up the alleys. That really cleaned up the attics and the basements. And people got rid of stuff, and they got their furniture off the porch and stuff, and it really cleaned up the neighborhood. You know, when the city hall is closed from 12 to 1, it's hard to call those. Someone up and say, hey, come pick up a special pickup for me. That cleanup was awesome. It was really well done. I mailed to every neighborhood group that I had a list of a plan of an activity that we could put together with the state's attorney's office to help clean up the crime. It will work. And if I'm elected mayor, we'll put that into effect immediately.
Mr. Williams.
Neighborhood associations are going to play an important role in improving our community moving forward. However, the primary impetus is still on the city to provide public safety. So one of the things that we have to do is, the mayor's talked about the POP unit. Unfortunately, right now, they're not able to engage in their commission as actively because we have a shortage of police officers, so they often find themselves doing regular duties. And what I would like to do is get those three new officers on the force so that we can have our POP unit going around and working with the neighborhood associations to identify problems that are particular to their neighborhood. I can tell you, in my neighborhood, I know where the crack houses are. I know where, excuse the language, but where the whorehouses are. And unfortunately, with the police being as short-staffed as they are, they don't know that. So I would like to see the POP unit become more of a liaison between the neighborhood associations and the police unit so that we can tackle crime in neighborhoods.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Wow, what a difference a couple of months make. I remember sitting at a forum in January out at Danville Area Community College, and a question about neighborhood associations came up. And Jim, if I'm not mistaken, you said that they weren't working and served no purpose. Now all of a sudden you're 100% behind them, and I'm glad to hear that. Every one of us as candidates for mayor need to be 100% behind neighborhood associations. We have risen from 4 to 24. There are more in the works now. We have a volunteer liaison who has stepped up to help us organize. That's somebody you don't have to pay but is still willing to put in the hours to help organize our neighborhood associations. 8 years ago when I ran, I said it would be a staple of my administration. It has continued to be that. And what I said then is exactly what has happened. Through neighborhood associations, we are rebuilding the community one block at a time so that when you step back and look at the city as a whole, we're far better off today because of the great work they're doing. And I appreciate it very much. We will continue to support neighborhood associations.
The next question will begin with Mr. McMahon. Is resurfacing a priority for such main thoroughfares as Bowman Avenue and Poland Road?
Well, I think you should add Gilbert on there, because I've got two different petitions for Gilbert Street, so I think you should add that to it. But the resurfacing is a priority, and you have to resurface based on the need and the quickest need and what's the highest traveled. And what we're doing is we're patching here. We need to take the high traffic areas and patch them and get them and up so we can go down to the lesser roads.
Mr. Williams.
Bowman Avenue continues to be one of our top priorities. However, I have not heard mention of Poland Road quite yet. But folks, there's a fundamental problem with how we do street repair in this city. It's generally very reactive. What we have to do is we have to assess every road in the city of Danville so that we can know where we stand in terms of repairs needed. After we assess them, then we need to put together a list of priorities. I have asked this administration repeatedly for a list of priorities in terms of road projects. I've been serving on city council for almost 2 years now, folks, and guess what? I still haven't got an answer. They can list three or four major priorities, but they forget about everything else. So we need to have a true assessment of where we are so we can know what our problems are, and then we can address them accordingly.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Absolutely. And in fact, if you look at what we are planning to do this next construction season, you'll recognize how important resurfacing is. We're starting phase one of Bowman Avenue. That will actually be under construction here in this upcoming construction season. Engineering on phase two of Bowman Avenue will also be done this construction season, so that next year we can actually move into the reconstruction of Bowman Avenue, and we'll have both phases all the way from Newell down to the entrance to Holiday Hills will be completely resurfaced and replaced. Gilbert Street is one over and over and over. People have said, when can we do something with it? Our fantastic engineering staff figured out a way that they're able to shore the base that was crumbling, and we can do a resurfacing project that has already been approved by the city council and will also be done in this construction season. Plans are underway for Poland Road. Unfortunately, that's going to be a couple of years down the road, and we have invited Alderman Williams multiple times to come out to the Public Works facility to see the prioritized plan that we have for roads, and he has been unable to do so.
Mr. Quick.
Yes, we need to do resurfacing. We first need to prioritize. Then we need to make sure that there's a long-term plan in place so that the funding has to be realistic. As earlier when I told you that I walked the streets, there's so many streets that need repair that we do need to start somewhere, but we need to prioritize, and we need to make sure that we have a realistic plan on how we're going to fund that, because it is costly to redo those roads.
The next question will go to Mr. Williams. Do you favor the proposed beltway or belt line, whichever?
No, I do not favor it at this time, and here is why, folks. We do need to have additional spaces opened up for development. However, we are struggling to take care of what we have now. I'm tired of going down the street and running into potholes every time you turn around. I'm tired of people. That's the number one complaint that I get from people. It's not about taxes. It's not about crime. It's not about public safety. It's about the condition of our roads. So before we go in adding additional miles of roads in our community, we need to first take care of what we already have in place. And as far as you see by the mayor's comment, he spoke exactly what I was talking about earlier. They can mention two or three projects that they have on the priority list, but where is the rest of the agenda? There isn't one, folks. And so as far as inviting me down to see one, that's not true. Anytime that they have information that we've requested, they email it to us, they give us a packet. I've been asking for 2 years, and I still have not received any information in terms of road or infrastructure priority.
Mr. Eisenhower.
You know, the question in regards to the Beltline is very simple. Are we going to plan for the future, or are we simply going to sit back, be reactive, and then be disappointed when we find out that the infrastructure or the land availability that we need in order for a large economic development project isn't there? That's what the Beltline is all about. It's not about circumventing Vermilion Street or bypassing the community. It's about opening up additional land for economic development, putting the infrastructure in place so that when we go out and try to attract some of these industry and manufacturing businesses that need a large tract of land to come to our community, the infrastructure is already there and already in place. Look at Lynch Road and all that you've seen build up over Lynch Road. several years ago, 20, 25 years ago, people fought against that and said, we don't need it. No use will ever come of it. And look where we are today, out of room and needing expansion. So the Beltline is important if we're going to plan for the future.
Mr. Quick.
No, I agree with Ricky. We need to first take care of the roads that we have. We do need to look to the future. Everyone I've talked to that I've talked to about the run around Danville said it's going to kill the inner city of Danville because everybody's going to go around. I have a business that's in inner city. If we take all that traffic and we divert it around the city, the businesses in town will suffer. I would not support it. I think that we need to focus on taking care of the road problems and the issues that we have now with the monies that we have now.
Mr. McMahon.
I would highly support the Beltline. You have to have jobs. If you want your taxes to be in maintaining the same place, you've got to have jobs, you've got to have people. We're running out of room where we can place people, like Scott has said. We have to have a Beltline that can open up, not just for industry, but for more opportunities for more people to have jobs. It's all about jobs. You have to have sewer, you have to have water, you have to have natural gas, and you have to have electricity. That is the only area in town where that we can grow in that area. If we try to go any farther out in the east, we end up in Indiana. This is the only way we can add to our tax base. I fully support the Beltline.
Mr. Eisenhower, do you support multi-unit housing within the city limits for ex-cons and sex offenders?
No, I do not. And in fact, one of the things that we have done over the course of the last 4 years is work with the Illinois Department of Corrections to get some of those programs stopped in this community. In doing my research regarding some of the problems that were occurring, the challenges, if you will, in our community, one of the things I came across were programs that actively recruited prisoners out of the Illinois Department of Corrections to come to Danville and participate in a transitional program, whether it was for violent sex offenders, for drug treatment, for alcoholism, and we were able to stop or significantly reduce those programs through an agreement with the Illinois Department of Corrections. We cannot continue to try to take care of the entire world. It's hard enough for us to take care of the problems that we have within our own community rather than to invite more to come here time and time again.
Mr. Quick.
Well, I'm going to say I agree with Scott on this one. I don't think we can afford to bring any more here because we can't meet the needs and the services of the people that we have. So I would not be in favor of that, and I would probably oppose that.
Mr. McMahon.
No, that's not one area where we want to grow. Our city already is at its, you know, the top it can be with structures where we're basically taking all of our services and our needs. So it's not in this time that we'd be able to grow in that area. I think we need a serious look at that. I agree with Scott on that issue.
Mr. Williams.
Well, I have to tell you folks, I find it very interesting that the mayor says that he doesn't support any such initiatives. In fact, I happen to have in my possession a document with his signature supporting an application from a local businessman to do just that. It was actually, in fact, the Harwell Hotel that you all have heard so much about and so many negative things. The mayor actually signed off on a letter of support for that program and bringing that business around. So, again, this is a prime example of talking out of both sides of your mouth, of saying one thing but yet doing another. So let's be real about that. Absolutely not. I do not support bringing any type of program like that here. However, what we do have to do is we have to work with the people that we have here. We have folks that have felonies. We have to how can we expect them to be productive members of this community if we do not allow them an opportunity to work and participate in basic democratic values? If they cannot provide for their families, they're going to turn right back to the kind of crimes that put them in prison in the first place.
This question will begin with Mr. Quick. There has been a lot of talk about budgets. What have you spent on your campaigns?
Well, that's a good question for me, because my wife and I have personally funded this campaign ourselves. I've asked for money from no one. I don't owe anyone any favors. I've did this campaign the old-fashioned way. I went door to door. We're going to be doing a telethon this weekend. I put $5,000 of our money at work for us. That's how much I believe that I can be the next mayor of Danville, and that's how much I've spent.
Mr. McMahon.
Well, I've had over 100 people actually donate to my campaign. I owe no favors to anyone. We spent to date around $23,000.
Mr. Williams.
I find that to be a very interesting question. When I first decided that I was going to run, I went to Mr. McMahon and other people and said, I'm going to run. And one of the reasons they discouraged me from running was I said, Ricky, it's going to take a lot of money. You're going to have to spend at least $30,000 to win this race. I happen to think that you care more about your voice being heard than how many ads you see in the newspaper or how many broadcasts you have on the radio. So I think that the people are going to rise up and let their voice be known. To date, I have spent $5,550 on my campaign. Most of that has come from smaller donations of $50 to $100. But I think in the end, the people's voice will prevail, not the money of the powers that be.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Today we have raised just under $13,000. We have spent just a little over $11,000, obviously with some additional marketing coming up in the next few days. The one thing that I can state to you is that I've actually turned down money. Turned down money from unions who represent city employees. I have said from day one and continue to say I will never accept money from unions that represent city employees. At no time do I ever want to go to the bargaining table, sit across from a group of people, and know deep in my heart that I owe a portion of my election to those individuals. And so I have turned down money from those who have asked if I would be willing to accept it, simply because at the end of the day, I too will owe no one my election.
Mr. McMahon, how do you plan to get deadbeat property owners to abate their violations or pay fines?
Okay, let's see. Well, you have your what used to be called night court, which is now your day court. So if those deadbeat real estate people or whoever you said they were come to court and they're charged with a fine, I guess they'll have to pay it.
Mr. Williams.
Well, how I would deal with court enforcement is very different from the way the current administration does. Let me tell you a little story, folks. One of our neighbors over on North Beard Street has one of the most impeccable houses that you've seen. They continue to keep it up and do a great job of maintaining their home. One weekend they had some siding that had to be replaced. So they put that siding up. And a few weeks, not even a few days later, they received a letter from the city saying, you have 10 days to get this painted, or we're going to start fining you $100 a day. Now, let me ask you, does that motivate you to go out there and fix your sign? And if it does, is it out of fear or out of respect for your community? I plan to treat people as partners, to go and work with them. When we notice that there's a problem, having the city inspectors actually speak with the people and develop a plan versus just randomly sending letters threatening people and fining them.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Well, first of all, the city administration does talk to people. We talk to people over and over and over trying to get them to comply. What we don't do is rush out and fine people, but unfortunately, in this day and age, sometimes that's the only way to get people's attention. I think it was interesting how we're talking about code enforcement when Alderman Williams was so quick to want to talk about the Harwall Hotel. An example of where we have tried and tried and tried to work with the property owner to make improvements, and yet time and time again find ourselves in a position where no improvements are being made, even when we threaten court. We've implemented a rental registration program that has certainly helped in some regards, and we do need to make some additional improvements to the municipal adjudication program so that we don't have individuals who continually circumvent the system, figure out ways not to fix up their property, and in the end also figure out ways not to have to pay the fines associated with them so that eventually we have to do something with the property.
Mr. Quick.
Well, with the code enforcement, it's a tough balance. This city is not business friendly. There's codes in place that need to be reviewed. They need to have the right group of people that are most affected involved in making the decisions on how those codes will be enforced. I think what the city has done is they've enforced codes that they've not had buy-in of the people that they've affected the most. So when you have code enforcement, whoever it affects the most should have some input on how those codes are done. I think we need to review the codes that we have now. If it does come to a legal position, then we would strictly let the courts and the legal system handle it after it came to that point. But before that, I think we need to be proactive and come up with a better plan on how we're going to come up with these enforcements.
Mr. Williams, if the state approves a casino for Danville, would you support and encourage it?
Absolutely not, and here's why. We have to think about all the side effects. You know, we hear so much about all the economic advantages, but what about the disadvantages? What about the man that comes home drunk from the casino and beats his wife, and then we have to send police out to respond to that? What about the wife who gets her family in trouble because she goes out and spends too much money at this place? You know, the consequences are going to be far outweigh the benefits that we have, period. And so, no, I do not support the casino. Not only that, folks, it's not coming. We keep talking about this project as if it's real. It's not, folks. It's not coming here. The House recently just voted and passed a bill, a House committee passed a bill that did not include casinos for Danville. So if you think that it's coming, you're living in a hoop dream. So not only is it not real, I do not support it, and we need to focus on real economic development.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Well, apparently I believe that it's only through dreams that eventually reality occurs. I have been working to bring a casino to this community. I'm not sitting back and waiting for others to do it so that when it comes, I can relish the opportunity, take advantage of the 1,500 jobs that it's going to create or the $5 million in annual revenue that it's going to bring to this community, both of which are desperately needed. I've spent a great deal of time in Springfield. I've spent a great deal of time lobbying with state representatives and state senators, making them understand how important those jobs and that revenue is to this community and the surrounding communities. And I am going to continue to do that. I believe that only through perseverance do we finally get to the finish line successfully. And so we are going to continue to persevere and try to bring that 1,500 jobs and $5 million in annual revenue back to this community.
Mr. Quick.
Well, it's not about what I want. It's about what the community wants. I think we needed to have done a better job on asking the community what they wanted. I've asked that it be put on a referendum and let you, the people, have a voice and tell us what you want. I have other ideas rather than a casino. I would rather see something like a river walk, a theme park such as Branson, Six Flags. If we're going to dream and we're going to work on a dream, let's do something that we can all be proud of. What about the Middle Fork Reservoir? Maybe we should spend more time on working on the Middle Fork Reservoir than bringing a casino here to Danville. But as I said, it's not up to me. It's up to you, the people, and you need to tell me what you want.
Mr. McMahon.
On this particular issue, the horse is already outside the barn. The city council has already voted to accept a casino in the city of Danville. I can tell you, in my opinion, you will have a casino in Danville. The state of Illinois is so broke that they have to turn to gambling and casinos for income. You will have a boat in Danville. It's not getting the boat is going to be your problem. It's getting the best deal for you, the citizens, when that boat gets here. That's what I'll study the most, is getting you the best bang for your buck. The casino's coming because the state of Illinois has to have income.
Mr. Eisenhower, do you support all city ordinances to get property owners to register their vacant structures or rental properties? Do you plan any changes to these ordinances?
We created first the rental registration program and an opportunity to try to identify the number of rental units that we have in the community. Also, that included an inspection program because that was one of the areas where we felt we needed to be in order to move the city forward through code enforcement. Following that, we implemented a vacant structure ordinance. That vacant structure ordinance was really set up so that we could get a true handle on how many vacant structures, which turn into dilapidated structures, we have currently in this community. The rental registration program has had some success, not so much in the vacant structure ordinance, and so absolutely there need to be tweaks to those ordinances. But you've got to start somewhere, you've got to put something in place, you've got to move forward a program, and then as you move it forward, you can start to decide what parts of the program are successful, what parts are not, and then change the parts that aren't. And that's what we're going to be working on over the next 4 years.
Mr. Quick.
As I've said before, city ordinances need to be reviewed. Now I'm going to tell you personal, firsthand, how this happened to me. The city has said be proactive, because every time I seem to want to do something, it turns into a nightmare. I looked at purchasing a building behind the water company, a 4-unit. I went to the city and said, here's what I want to do. I want to make sure there's not going to be any problems. They assured me there would be no problems. I bought the building. I hired a contractor. They went to pull a permit. When they went to pull the permit, the building had been flagged. It was on a potential teardown list. They would not issue a permit to the contractor. The contractor came back to me, said, listen, Dave, there's a problem. I had to go to the city. I had to sign a thing saying I would have that building renovated within 1 year's time. We spent a lot of money on that building in a short period of time that was not feasible for us to do. That's why we need to watch and how we do these ordinances. Thank you.
Mr. McMahon.
I think the registration fee is really an unfair tax on businesses who are trying to invest money in your community. I think it's okay to have a registration fee to know where the rental properties are for your, so you can study which properties are rentals and which properties are Section 8. I don't have a problem with having that type of registration, but I don't think you should punish people for investing in your community. I don't think you should charge for that registration. It's okay for the knowledge to help build your city and better protect your city, but all you're doing is taxing a business that you actually need to come into your community and take care of your blight and get your properties back up. As you raise your property values back up, remember, that's less tax out of your pocket. Every time you tear down a piece of property that has a value of anything, you, the taxpayer right here, have to pick up the money and pay more money out of your taxes.
Mr. Williams.
Yes, ma'am. I would not change the rental registration program. I think that we've come up with a balance that works pretty well there. However, I have a lot of problems with the vacant structure ordinance, and here they are. Number one, right now my grandmother is very ill in the hospital. She could pass any time now. So if her house isn't sold in less than a year, we're going to have to pay $500 a year or more for my dead grandmother's house to try to sell it. I think that is actually ridiculous, and it's adverse to your citizens. Second of all, it also is, as Mr. McMahon said, it's adverse to business. Folks, I bought a house on Buchanan Street. I proposed that it would take 1 year to fix that house. It has taken me 3 years because there were all kinds of problems with it that weren't found in the first inspection. So sometimes it takes a little bit longer to develop things than we had hoped. So do we want to penalize people who are actually working on developing and renovating places to improve our community? And that's what this vacant structure does. It basically taxes people for trying to improve the community.
Mr. Quick, the next question. What are your thoughts about the county health rankings that were announced this week? Do you think that the downsizing of the Vermilion County Health Department will have a positive or negative impact on Vermilion County's ranking?
I think it probably will have a negative impact on this community. Before, I've talked about meeting, balancing the needs and services of this community. One of the programs, I think, Linda, maybe you headed it up, was the teen pregnancy program. And we significantly, through education, seen that program work and that rate drop in teen pregnancy. When that portion, there was a lot of different portions that were closed out of the health department. I don't know that long-term, I think we'll see it's going to cost the city more. Maybe we should have funded some of that up front and prioritized and better spent the money.
Mr. McMahon.
First of all, it doesn't relate to the cuts in the health department. Most of that survey is from 202 to 209. And that is just shows you the reality of what our community looks like. It's not the city of Danville. It's the whole county. That's a snapshot of the whole county. You have more adults smoking here than you do in Champaign or any other county. That's a reality of what we have in our county. We have more poor people per capita than any other county our size anywhere. This is all a snapshot of the reality of the county, who has an industrial base that basically fell apart. Without jobs, without income, you're going to have people unhealthy. To have healthy food, it's expensive.
Mr. Williams.
I'm very disturbed by our health rankings because it says that we're not doing so well, folks. We're not in a good condition. We're not in a good position in terms of health of our people and our community. I think that the reductions in the health department are going to have a negative impact on our community because, imagine, our numbers were already very low across areas with having these additional services in place, and imagine what's going to happen when those services aren't there. However, I always say give honor to whom honor is due and credit to whom credit is due. Even though it was tough, Mr. McMahon, you did the right thing because we did not have the money to fund those programs. And in terms of being financially responsible, we have to live within our means. We were not being paid, therefore we could not pay our employees. So I'm probably going to lose votes tonight, but Mr. McMahon, you did the right thing, and I applaud you for it.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Well, certainly the numbers are disturbing, and whether they're 2002 to 2009 or whether they're last year's numbers, the fact of the matter is the reduction in the health department makes a significant difference. If not reflected in the numbers that we just saw, where we are now 98th out of 102 counties, think of what it's going to mean for the future of this county when we have a diminished health department not able to address some of these very key issues in our community. And where I will disagree with Alderman Williams' praise, it goes towards prioritization, where you're going to spend those dollars. And part of what we try to do is look at not only how you expend them and what the short-term outcome is going to be of expending those dollars, but the long-term as well. The fact of the matter is, in the end, these numbers and these health issues are going to cost you a lot of money, whether it's in funding a health department or in funding other services through social agencies or the state and federal government to take care of these types of individuals. So it was an unfortunate prioritization decision that in the long run cost us a ton.
Next question, we'll start with Mr. McMahon. Have you accepted any campaign money from anyone not living in Danville or anyone who cannot vote in the city election?
Well, I think since I have a website, people can donate from anywhere. So, yes, there is people that have donated from outside Danville. There's a lot of people that donated who used to live in Danville and don't live here anymore. So I'd have to say, yes, I do have people who have donated outside of Danville.
Mr. Williams.
Yes, ma'am, I have. There are three individuals, three sets of folks, Rusty and Ginger Poole, my sister's in-laws who just love me and wanted to support me. Father's first cousin, Kenny Cotton from Mississippi, who just believes in helping out your family. And then the third person is my best friend, who is a DHS grad who is employed over in India at Eli Lilly. Let's see, is there anyone else? I think that's all. If there are others, I will be happy to tell you when I remember them.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Well, fortunately, I too have some loving family members, my sister being one of those, and she has helped in my campaign along with my father in contributing some money. And I've also received money from individuals outside of the community who are members of the Illinois Municipal League. I am a member of the Illinois Municipal League. I serve as a vice president on their board of directors. It is an organization that is the lobbying, education, entity for the 1,400 municipalities throughout the state of Illinois. They value my membership as a part of their board. They would like to see me not only continue as mayor here in this community, but if reelected, I will also continue to serve another 4 years on their board of directors. And so because of their support and my efforts that I have done on their board for statewide issues that also positively impact our community, I have received donations from them.
Mr. Quick.
No, as I stated before, my wife and I have funded this. We both live in Danville, so we have not accepted money from anybody outside of Danville because we did it ourselves.
Okay, we'll start the next question with Mr. Williams, and bear with me because this is a long one. Approximately 61% of the people that work for the city live outside the city of Danville. Don't you think they should live within the city of Danville for the safety of the people in the city? They can't vote for you. They don't pay city taxes. Your real estate taxes help fund their pensions. What's your opinion?
Absolutely. I believe that all city employees should reside in the city of Danville. There are a couple of reasons. Number one, it's easy for them to request salary increases when they're not going to pay the taxes that fund it. first of all. Second of all, particularly in our public safety departments, our fire and police, I think that there's a lot of community development and neighborhood development that can happen through those agencies. I would like to see our police out doing some beats where they get to know people and get to know the residents in the area so that they see the police as partners instead of as enemies. I think that would help us solve crime in our community. The other reason is I just think that when you live in a city, you tend to take more pride in the city, point blank. So I absolutely believe everyone should live here. And I believe now all new hires are required to live in the city of Danville, so I support that completely.
Mr. Eisenhower.
That is a change our administration made. We began with all non-union personnel hired after a certain date of 2007 must now live within the corporate limits of the city of Danville. We also were able to negotiate through contract discussions for local 703 laborers and local 703 clerical to also live inside the city once hired beyond the date that those contracts started. We have tried to do the same thing with police and with fire, and in fact, not only have they not been willing to become residents of the city, but police specifically have actually asked to expand the five-mile rule so that they can live 30 miles outside of the city limits. And one of the areas where I wish we could change that in police is I'd love for every police officer to be able to take a car home, to have it sitting in the driveway protecting the neighborhood. But I'm not going to do that when it's protecting the neighborhoods of Bismarck, Westville, and Tilton instead of right here in our community. So all city employees should live in Danville.
Mr. Quick.
Once again, this is an issue that is not up to me. It's what the community wants. If you're asking me, I think it's still a free country. I worked for Quaker Oats for 23 years. The majority of those people probably don't live in the city of Danville. I think you as an American citizen have the right to decide where you want to live at. It's your taxpayers' money. If you want us to have our police and fire and city employees live within the city, then that's something that you would tell me and that I would make sure would happen. But me personally, I think it's still a free country, and if people, they have the right to live where they want to live at.
Mr. McMahon.
This is an issue that comes up quite often, whether you live in the city, whether it's 5 miles out. I think this is America, and I think people should have the right to live where they want. I would support any city employee who would at least live in Vermain County. I think the county, you pay taxes in the county, you pay taxes in your township. I would like to see all city officials live in our city. I'd like to see the police and fire to live in our city. But I like to set up our city so that they want to live in our city.
We'll start this question with Mr. Eisenhower. If you had a relative or friend employed by the city, would you be able to make impartial decisions to the betterment of the whole community?
I think that I could. I don't think there's any question about that. There would obviously have to be a large degree of separation if, in fact, that was the case. As mayor, my chief oversight is of all of the department and division heads throughout the city. Absolutely, I would not have a relative serving in any one of those positions. But to have someone serving in a laborer's position that had several layers between us, I would have no problem whatsoever in being able to manage that.
Mr. Quick.
I would not have any problem managing that. In owning a small business, I've had a lot of family that works for me. And in my family working for me, I have always felt that I've been harder on them than I am on the other employees. In being married to a wife that is an HR manager, one of the things that she strived to do was be firm, fair, and consistent. So if I did have a relative that was working for me, they would be treated firm, fair, and consistent, and I'd probably be harder on them than anybody else. I do have a cousin that works for the city. He would not receive any special treatment. He'd probably have to work harder than everybody else.
Mr. McMahon.
I think you can be fair. I think that as the mayor of the city, you have to look at the whole good of the city. And if you have a relative in the city working for the city at the same time, you're probably going to be tougher. You're probably going to respect more, just like you do in your own business. My kids don't have much of a break at the rink when they do something wrong or something. We really probably treat our children tougher than we do the rest. But I think we could be fair and balanced with that, yes.
Mr. Williams.
could absolutely be fair and balanced. I've had experience with this. Back in 2007, we desperately needed a program director at the Boys and Girls Club. We interviewed folks, and it just so happened that my sister Amy was the best candidate for the job. Under her leadership, we went from 9% honor roll to 45% honor roll. We significantly eliminated a portion of our debt there at the Boys and Girls Club. So I think having the most qualified person for the job is the most important thing. And actually, I did write her up once, so yes, I could handle that very well.
The next question will begin with Mr. Quick. As a candidate for mayor, have you received or have you been offered political donations from any public employee bargaining unit that currently has contracts with the city of Danville?
No, I have not.
Mr. McMahon.
I can say that I'm endorsed by the fire union, I'm endorsed by the police union, I'm endorsed by the laborers union. So yes, I have received some money from those particular unions. And that is, I think, a proud moment to have is when these unions and these employees of this city think that you could be the best leader for them. So yes, I have received money from unions. And that doesn't mean anything when it comes to making a decision. It means that they trust your leadership. That's what that means.
Mr. Williams.
No, I have not received any money from any public unions that we will supervise or members thereof. I have to disagree with Mr. McMahon. I think that it's very problematic for you to supervise, to receive money from people that you're going to have to supervise and negotiate their contracts. It's my understanding that lots of promises have already been made, particularly fire chief and police chief. So how can you say that you're not going to be beholden to these folks who have helped get you in office?
Fire chief and police chief enter the union.
Mr. Eisenhower?
Absolutely not. And in fact, I have turned them down. At no time would I ever accept an endorsement or money from a union representing one of our city employee groups, specifically for the reasons that you've already heard me state. And that is, at no time do I want to be sitting across the table from a union knowing that I owe my election to them, or at least a portion of my election to them. When you accept endorsements and you accept those checks from union organizations, they do expect something in return at the table. And at no time would I ever put myself in that position.
Next question will start with Mr. McMahon. With our brain trust in Springfield raising taxes, is there anything you can do to encourage manufacturing to settle in Danville?
Well, let's look at the state and let's look at our city. They're both raising taxes almost at the same rate. So I think we're really in trouble in Danville when you look at that. But that horse is out of the barn. They raise your personal income tax. They raise our corporate income tax. That makes it tougher and tougher and tougher to be a bordering state right next to Indiana and expect to bring industry over this area. So that even tells you that the city needs even tighten her belt even greater to offset some of that cost that the governor has passed on to the manufacturers and to you, the people.
Mr. Williams.
Yes, ma'am, absolutely we can. The first things that we can do are, number one, be a good steward of the resources that we already have. You know, look, Scott has done some good things. He's helped improve the condition of our parks, and he's started to get our pension payments back on task. However, I feel like he's mismanaged a lot of other areas. He's created positions, particularly in public works, where folks are making, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year plus benefits that simply aren't needed. So the number one thing that we can do to entice business back in the area is get our financial house in order. And the second thing is that will allow us to focus on our infrastructure so that when folks visit this city, that it looks like a place that they would want to do business. The final thing that we can do is something that we've already done, is offer various tax incentives and such to get manufacturers to locate here.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Well, Ricky's already taken some of mine. I appreciate that. It'll give me time to do the rest. Absolutely. You know, folks, let's not give up. Things and times are tough, and we recognize that, and the state doesn't make it any easier, but we've got a lot of things to offer. We can offer incentives, and we've been putting together packages and resources to do that. We need to continue to support Vermilion Advantage. You have no idea how much work is going on in that office and the opportunities that we're getting because of the great work that's taking place in Vermilion Advantage. We need to continue to support them. The training programs at Danville Area Community College are absolutely unmatched by any other community college. college or educational system in retraining the workforce. And we need to tout that more and take advantage of that more. And then we need to continue to improve the quality of life in this community and the quality of infrastructure in this community, because in the end, when they decide where to locate, they're also going to decide where to live. And by improving the quality of life, they're going to choose Danville for both.
Mr. Mayoral Quick. Candidates Forum on WDAN, Danville.
Well, thanks for taking care of the rest of them. Here's where I think we can come in. We need to work at a state level with State Representative Chad Hayes and State Senator Mike Berich. They need to continue to hammer on the state to make us more friendly. We need to hold or decrease taxes to make us be more business friendly. If we continue to raise taxes, businesses will not come here. The state has done that, and we do that. We've raised our real estate tax. We've added a gas tax. We added a food tax. We have to become business friendly ourselves. We need to focus on the businesses that are here. We need to take care of them first. So that is what I would focus on.
Okay, the next question will start with Mr. Williams. With comments from some of the mayoral candidates that they are going to do this or do that, this indicates the concept of the mayor-aldermanic form of government is either misunderstood or not accepted. Is it understood that you must work, or do you clearly understand that you must work with the aldermen to accomplish goals to benefit the citizens of Danville?
Absolutely, you have to work with the aldermen. If you don't, see, there's something that most people don't understand. The mayor is less powerful than most people realize, because the fact is he doesn't vote unless there's a tie. However, he's far more powerful than most people realize in that he alone sets the agenda. And the problem that we've had so far is that certain things haven't gotten to the table that should have, and things have made it to the table that had no business being there in the first place. So yes, absolutely, you must work with your aldermen to accomplish anything. I think the aldermen need to be more involved in the process, particularly the budget, and also when their economic development projects coming. How is it that I can sit on the Vermillion Advantage Board and be an alderman in the city of Danville and find out about a multi-million dollar project that we're about to engage in 2 days before it happens, folks? We have to have much more transparency in our government, and we have to work with our aldermen to make that happen.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Certainly I understand the role that the aldermen play. I served as an alderman for 5 years, and I think because of that, I have been a far greater communicator with aldermen in providing information. You know, and Alderman Williams has brought it up a couple of times. They were only given 48 hours notice. Unfortunately, under the state statute of the Open Meetings Act, there's only certain things we can talk about in closed session. Confidentiality when dealing with any economic development project is absolutely imperative. And so because the Open Meetings Act restricts us from being able to talk about certain things in closed session, and since we can't talk about it in open session, all we can do is provide them with as much information when we can, as soon as we can. And the mayor alone does not set the agenda. The mayor certainly has a strong role in setting the agenda, but committees can establish items to go on the agenda, department heads can establish items to go on the agenda, and aldermen can establish items to go on the agenda.
Mr. Quick.
Well, it's very important, as you've heard, the mayor doesn't vote on issues. The aldermen are your voice. The aldermen need to be educated better on things that they are voting on, such as Ricky had talked about. We need to better utilize our aldermen to make sure that you, the people, have the voice that you deserve. So if I'm elected mayor, I will make sure that we educate the aldermen on the things that are in front of us, and that you, the people, have the voice that you need by better utilizing those aldermen and educating them better.
Mr. McMahon.
I also had the privilege of being an alderman for 6 years, so I do understand the role of an alderman. But I can tell you that for the aldermen really to get to play in this game, you have to have a finance committee, because that's where all the decisions are made. You got to have a finance committee, so when the situation where Ricky's talking about not getting enough notice, you know, this is a multi-million dollar deal, borrowing a multi-million dollars worth of money. They should have had a little more opportunity, and that's why you should have had a finance committee help to make that decision. And what happens is then you, the public, get to play, because between the finance committee meeting and the actual council meeting is where you get to get play your opinion. This city council desperately needs a finance committee.
For the next question, Mr. Eisenhower, for nearly 50 years, we've had I-74 running through the southern portion of Danville. For some reason, our retail development over the years has moved far north away from the interstate. How would you promote retail development to bring traffic off of I-74 in southern Vermilion County into the city?
This is exactly why you have to have municipal planning. Our problem is, many, many years ago, the decision was made we were going to do other things with our access to the interstate rather than open it up for retail development. That decision was made when the town center complex was built on Main Street and not off the interstate. That was made when this property was built 35 years ago here rather than down off the interstate. The reason that this building wasn't put down on the interstate is because the interstate had already been filled with other properties, with other structures on properties that should have been reserved and retained for retail development. It was not. Poor planning put us in the position we are. And quite frankly, folks, the city doesn't tell developers where to develop. The developers decide on their own. They're going to look for rooftops, and they're going to look for where other businesses like them exist. And today in Danville, that's in the northern part of the community.
Mr. Quick.
I've always felt that Interstate 74 is one of our greatest assets, and we've underutilized building off of the interstate. If you look across the rest of Illinois, you will see how other communities have all developed along the interstate. We have chose, I guess, to go north and not utilize that resource. We need to take a better look at how we can position ourselves so businesses will look at utilizing that opportunity right there off 74. If you go to Champaign, Springfield, any of those places, you're going to see that they're all developed along 74. We have not done a good job of utilizing that asset that we have.
Mr. McMahon.
The I-74 corner is in process now with Tilton, 14th Street, where they're going to take 14th Street and totally make that level. So instead of having that bridge, that 14th Street will be level, which will open up a lot of area for different types of businesses. The city of Danville has got to work as a partnership with the mayor of Tilton to work together as a team to help bring different stores and different departments to that area so that we could share the jobs for you, the citizens of Danville. That will be a reality, but it's a couple years down the road. But Mayor Phillips is working real hard on that. What happens in the past, the city of Danville and the city of Tilton have not worked together as a team. So there's been a fight for many, many, many years. And what we need to do is work together as a team, because face it, we're running out of room for retail development in Danville.
Mr. Williams.
I think one of the most important things that we can do is aggressively pursue one major retail shop to come. And I would prefer that it locate here in Danville, but if not, if we could get it in Tilton right off of the interstate, folks, we would lose out a little bit of property tax, maybe a little bit of sales tax, but it would help keep people here, help keep young people like folks that I've met recently who are considering moving because they have to always go and do their shopping in other communities. So I think what we need to do is partner with Vermilion Advantage to aggressively recruit one or two major places that will locate close to the interstate. And just as we're expecting that development flows around the mall and around the new site that we're going to be having up north, I think that if we can get one place down south, more places will come and we can have true development near the highway.
I'm going to try to get one more question in real quick before the closing. Do you support strict enforcement of building codes for Danville? And we'll start with you, Mr. Quick.
I do, as long as the codes are fair. And I've said before that we need to review those codes to make sure that they are fair. We do need to make sure that rental property homeowners have a safe home to live in. That number one should be our priority on code enforcement. Is it safe? Yes, we do need to have code enforcement, but we need to have a balance, and we need to have the right people in place that determines those ordinances and how they'll work.
Mr. McMahon.
Code enforcement is critical to the safety of our citizens. So yes, code enforcement, we need to even make it a little stricter, and we need to help each one of our neighborhood groups achieve what they really want to have, and that is to clean up the neighborhoods and have a safe neighborhood again. And code enforcement is very critical to making that a reality. Working with neighborhood groups and working with the police and working with our inspection departments, we will enforce code enforcement because that's really the only avenue the city has to clean up neighborhoods.
Mr. Williams.
Yes, I do believe in strict code enforcement. But the problem is that we have now is that there's unbalanced code enforcement, right? They hit up my neighbors down on Beard Street, but they aren't hitting up the people catty-corner from them that have nearly a stitch of paint on their house to begin with. So if we're going to have code enforcement, it has to be done fairly, equally, and across the board to everyone. I plan to go neighborhood by neighborhood. That way nobody can say, well, Ricky, you didn't hit that area because that's where you lived or that's where your grandma lived. We can actually start with my neighborhood if we'd like and move from there. But we have to go neighborhood by neighborhood, business district by business district, and make sure that we clean it up because it's got to be fair and it's not now, period.
Mr. Eisenhower.
Absolutely. Code enforcement is essential to a thriving community. But everybody else is really focused on residential, and you've heard me talk about that before. That's critical. That's talking about property value, not only yours but your neighbors, which is also a key element. But let's also talk about business development and infrastructure development. You know, when you allow people to build not to code business or infrastructure, in the end what happens is you end up footing the bill. There are many examples, unfortunately, in this community where developers have built, they've been allowed to build outside of the code, roads or sidewalks, and then in the end when those crumble, because they've annexed into the city, it's not the developer who's footing the bill for the reconstruction of those, it's you, the taxpayer. So in the end, poor code enforcement, whether it's residential, businesses, or of infrastructure, cost you money, not the developer.
Gentlemen, we have come to the end of our time that's been allotted for questions. I thank all of you for the questions that you submitted, and I will tell you I still have a stack sitting here, and I bet by now there's probably more you'd like to ask. We will now go to the closing arguments. Each person will have 3 minutes. We'll begin with Mr. McMahon.
During the last 8 years, under this administration, your property taxes have raised by $1.4 million. That takes your average household 23%. I have the papers right here in front of me to show you that. We have the highest home rule sales tax in the state of Illinois. City home rule sales tax in this city is 2.5%. That's the highest of any city home rule sales tax in the state of Illinois. Just this year alone, that's going to take an additional $3 million out of your pocket. Out of your pocket. Plus, let's look at what other fees they raise. The garbage fees, the sewer fees, the restaurant tax. $750,000 out of your pocket this year alone. Let's look at the gasoline tax. $900,000 out of your pocket. $900,000. And it's about to go up again in July. If I'm elected mayor, we're going to freeze it. We're not going to let it go up again. Let's not forget the Gaudio project, where Budweiser was going to be on Lynch Road. The gentleman who owned Big Boy needed it desperately. Budweiser was a $7 million deal. And because you couldn't turn left, that was forced to go to Tilton, where they got the $7 million deal. That would have saved you, the taxpayers, out of your pocket $35,000 a year. Let's look at all the taxes in the last 8 years that this administration have raised. You got the hotel liquor tax increase. You got liquor tax increase. You got the gas tax. You got the home rule sales tax. Over the last 8 years, that's over $8 million out of your pocket. Why are you walking around with less money? Is because the city is taxing you to death. I can tell you without a doubt, if the city keeps increasing taxes at the rate they're going, you won't be able to live in your own house even after it's paid for. We have to do better
with less. In my closing, I believe the position is quite clear. I believe that Danville can be on the right direction. But first of all, we got to quit taxing our citizens. We got to treat our citizens like adversaries, not like there's somebody that doesn't belong here. We need to work together as a team.
Mr. Williams.
Folks, I'm here tonight to offer you a clear choice. I will start from left to right on the panel. Mr. Quick is a very honorable man. He has integrity, but he doesn't have experience managing large budgets, and he doesn't have experience managing a diversity of revenue streams. And also, although he's a good person, he doesn't have a concrete plan for Danville like I do. The mayor has created, increased, and taxed us nearly to death. He says it to you that he's trying to diversify taxes so taxpayers don't, so that the property tax owners don't have to pay more money. However, in three out of the 7 years that he created or increased other taxes, he also raised your property taxes, folks. So let's be real. Let's be true about some things. Then the other thing that he's done is given nearly 30% in salary increases to the top 20 non-union employees in the city of Danville. And quite frankly, he tried to give himself a raise. He'll say that he didn't, but Channel 15 caught him in a little flip-flop, right? One day he's for the raise, he's all for it, it has to go through, and the next day that he's not. And finally, quite frankly, there is just not the open and honest transparency that we need in government with Mayor Eisenhower. Mr. McMahon he did not vote to raise taxes. However, he had tried to raise our taxes, and his buddies got happy and ran with it, and they raised them even more than he intended to. Mr. McMahon has had an additional $4 million a year to work with, and yet he's still projecting a $2.2 million deficit. He says that we want to run the city like he runs the county, like a business. I don't know any business person in this room that says that it makes economic sense for us to operate at a 5% deficit. At the same time, living under this big, huge tax increase, he's also gotten rid of dozens of frontline workers, required employees to pay more for their insurance, and for what? So that we can go in the hole even further? I don't think that that's the kind of leadership that we need in this county. I am here in this city. I'm here to offer you a clear choice of integrity and financial responsibility. I've shown you time and time again that I can't be bought. When Sam Haziri came to me with a check about a liquor store, I said no and exposed it. When McMahon's people came to me offering a job if I would step out of the race and support him, I said no and I exposed it. You're going to have somebody with integrity, but secondly, almost as important, you're going to have a good financial steward. At the Boys and Girls Club, we have, unlike my person to the right, we have operated in the black every year that I've been there. I took an organization operating $90,000 in the hole and made it operate in the black under less circumstances. We have created 10 new jobs with pensions, and we've reduced our debt by more than 80%. None of the people on this panel can say that to you, folks. So I offer you honesty, integrity, and financial responsibility. If you want that for the future of Danville, then you should vote for me.
Mr. Eisenhower.
All I ask you to do over the course of the next 4 days before Tuesday and you head into the polls to vote is truly and honestly think about what you've heard. Think about what you've heard tonight and in all of the other forums that have been held over the course of the last 3 months. You've heard that we're going to hire more police. We're going to hire more firemen. We're going to hire more inspectors. We're going to lower taxes. One thing that you have not heard, however, is while they've been extremely critical of my diversification of revenue sources, you've not heard one single person say, I'm going to eliminate any of them. You heard Alderman Williams at one forum, although not tonight, say he was going to reduce motor fuel tax by 2 cents, the very dollars that are being used to improve the infrastructure he says we so desperately need to improve in this community. While Jim McMahon has bashed me day in and day out over the last 3 months about taxes, not once has he stood before you and said, if elected, here's what I'm going to eliminate. In fact, in an article in the paper, he said just the opposite, that he couldn't eliminate any of those taxes. He knows what I've told you, and that is if we're going to maintain city services to the level they are today, that has to continue. Let's talk about running the city like the county. What I should have done, I guess, is jack your property tax up 40%, diminish some very critical services or eliminate them, and then in the end, still not be able to balance a budget unless, of course, I'm going to use $2.2 million out of the reserves. I want you to think honestly, and if you have any questions, you please come talk to me. It's not the Gaudio project. It's not the Budweiser project. It was the Paul Offit project. And if you want to come talk about the reality of what took place then, please come see me. I'll be happy to do it. Over 8 years ago, I made a pledge in front of a group very similar to you. And I said, as mayor of Danville, I will be fiscally responsible. I will bring us out of debt, and I will put us on the right track with a fiscal philosophy that will be successful year in and year out. I told you that we were going to improve the quality of life, we were going to improve the infrastructure of this community, and that we were going to make Danville better one block at a time through the use of neighborhood associations. I have done every one of those things and will continue to make Danville a better place. When I came into office, the promise that I made to myself, to my family, and to you as the residents of this community is that at no time would I ever make a decision based on what's best for Scott Eisenhower or his political future, but instead, what's in the best interest of the city of Danville. I have done that. I will continue to work hard for you. I have an extreme passion for the job I'm doing today and an amazing love for this community, and I want the opportunity to continue to make it a better place to live, work, and play for the next 4 years.
Mr. Quick.
Ask yourself this question. Are you happy with the way things are here in Danville? I'm not. It's time for change and new leadership. We, the taxpayers, have tightened our belts while the city has added to our financial burdens. By adding a gas tax, a food tax, a beverage tax, and raising our property taxes, we continue to lose businesses and our city continues to deteriorate. We are not a business-friendly community. We need to work with the existing businesses so that they will stay in Danville. And beyond that, we need to make our community attractive to new businesses. We also need to be progressive thinkers and identify areas of development that can be explored to add value to the community and to increase options to both businesses and the citizens of Danville. We have heard a lot of talk about a casino coming to Danville. What if we explored such ideas as a Riverwalk, a theme park, Kings Island, Dollywood, Branson, Six Flags, and revive the Middle Fork Reservoir? In being progressive, what economic development will lead us into the 21st century? I feel we did a great job on creating a service industry. Now we need to look to the future and bring high-tech jobs to Danville. I feel we have an untapped resource that sits in our backyard, that being the University of Illinois. I would ask that we set up informational booths and explain the opportunities that we have here in Danville and on a career day at the University of Illinois. I'm proud of the fact that I'm not a politician, but an ordinary man who happens to have some business experience, a dream, and a vision for a better Danville. I need your help, your support, to turn this city around. You deserve to have a leader who will work hard for you, listen to your voice. Your vote for me will help move Danville forward and bring about a positive change for this community. I am asking for your vote and your support on April 5th.
We thank the candidates for joining us tonight, for their answers. We thank the audience for their questions. And we thank the candidates for their commitment to the challenge of running for mayor of the city of Danville. And now it is up to all of you, ladies and gentlemen. You hold the future of Danville in your hands. Please make good use of the power you hold. Cast your vote on Tuesday. Step up and do this very important thing for our community. Vote. This broadcast will be archived up on VermilionCountyFirst.com. And just a side note for you, we will be talking to the newly elected mayor of the city of Danville on Newsmakers 1490 Wednesday morning. So please plan to tune in to hear what the mayor of Danville has to say April 6th at 7:30 a.m. on WDAN. Our thanks to the Village Mall, Vermilion Advantage, and to Newhoff Communications for their sincere investment in our community's future. On behalf of the sponsors and the candidates, thank you for being part of this event. Please vote on Tuesday, and good night.